good morning, or good evening, or afternoon, or whenever you're listening to the program. This is Learn for Life News, Thursday, the 29th of November, 2012. Today, we'll be looking at Teach Meet Twist, teacher blogs, a couple of nice resources linked to that, and we're having an interview with Kevin Bartle. It's going to be really, really rich and fulfilling. Now, one of the things I've noticed by doing this news every day is you start to see patterns, and this is a kind of non-academic piece of research I'm doing for 3 months, maybe longer if I get sponsorship, but I'm trying to join the teacher communities together or actually reflect what's happening out there. And what I do see happening is suddenly there is a lot of blogs springing up showing actual practice and reflection on practice, and this is really inspiring. It's like it suddenly started to flourish. It suddenly started to burgeon. You've got this inflorescence, if you want, of different teachers in different areas, media teachers, French teachers, MFL teachers, science teachers, social science teachers, all starting to blog and starting to come together in groups and meet up and link up in ad hoc ways and more formal ways. So today we'll be looking at Teach Meet Twist that went on today, the Teach Meet with a Difference. If you don't know what a Teach Meet is, look it up on Google Teach Meet, and that will bring you to a list, or look through our archives on l4l.co.uk. We have a comprehensive list at licorize.com/users/3YEBEAMS, and you'll find all the booklets, all the text booklets and the hashtags and the tags linked to all the resources there. You can make up little booklets and print them out to PDF or send them by email or indeed put them into a reader. There's a little resource that's been archived by date and by hashtag. So as I go along day on day, you can find these resources quite easily. I'm actually using it myself now as a very comprehensive filing system to pull out stuff very quickly. If someone needs something on Twitter, I can pull it out from my own resource, proving to be very valuable indeed. Anyway, today was Teach Meet Twist, which was held at the Knight Zookeeper headquarters in London. And it was a Teach Meet with a Difference. Not people did give some presentations at the beginning, some open presentations, and then people got together and they had face-to-face discussions. I'm not quite sure what went on in those discussions because I wasn't there, but I was looking at it from afar and pulling in the hashtags. Now, the hashtag is that little grid of 2 lines by 2 lines, like a lot of noughts and crosses symbol that demarcates a particular keyword or concept used at Teach Meets on Twitter. So when you put a hashtag followed by, in this case, TM Twist, which stands for Teach Meet Twist, and then you add a comment or an observation or a link to a resource, or you reference another person on Twitter using that hashtag. What I do is I use storyfy.com, and when the hashtag stream starts to erupt, as it does with some Teach Meets, not with others, but the more information you put and tag with a hashtag, whether it's on a picture site or anywhere else, Storyfy will go looking for it, and it will suck it into a linear stream, which you can then mix, match, turn around. If someone mentions a particular resource or a blog, you can then go to that blog and suck that in, and it will take a snapshot of the picture of the blog. Or if there's a video, it will take the videos out, and you'll be able to show the videos in the timeline as well. So it archives that particular day's activity as reflected by the users on Twitter, if people can understand what I'm talking about. If you're not on Twitter, get on Twitter. Get a mobile phone, get a smartphone, get on Twitter, get connected, basically, is all I can say. And some things came up in the Teach Meet Twist that stood out. They're like little plums, little icebergs of gems in the middle of the meeting that people pointed to because people were talking about them in their presentations or in their groups. And one that came up again is David Didow's Learning Spy blog, and his particular blog on slow writing and how to slow down and can improve your writing, and how to sort of take things apart and deconstruct and reflect on how you can finely hone your writing. And he points to another resource, which is Triptico, which is a resource he must have built with David Triptico. And this is a kind of writing template to help with that online. So the Learning Spy blog is bit.ly, bit.ly, learningspy_slow. And the Triptico is bit.ly/Triptico. Those are two that stood out. The other one was a blog by Lisa Jane Ashes called Reflections of a Learning Geek. And this is a very, very rich blog. It talks about using solo levels to revise. And it has a lesson in there on writing prep with, again, some exemplars. This is GCSE level, but this could be brought down, I'm sure, to junior schools and adopted and adapted. And that is bit.ly/use_solo_level. And that is another amazing resource. The next one is a number of teacher resources on blogs. Again, Reflections of a Learning Geek. And this is talking about solo autonomy for beginners, about making students autonomous using solo and those techniques. And that is bit.ly/Lisa Jane Ashes. And the next one is Oliver Quinlan's blog, which came up when people started talking about Edmodo. And of course, Oliver's post about children self-organizing online communities is fascinating account of how he noticed that they were coming together to use certain spaces and the collaboration involved. And that is bit.ly/Quinlan, QUINLANEDMODO. And the following SID resource is the one at Canon's Broadside. Now, this is my interview today, and my interview with this is with Kevin Bartle about what he's been doing at Canon's High School. And it's just incredible. He's got three lessons here talking about his slow, interdependent and deep learning, SID learning, mocronym, he calls it, a mocronym. And he says, I'm a big fan of slow learning and have been since I worked at a school where the default lesson length was 100 minutes. The experience changed my teaching irrevocably and for the better. Instead of rapid-fire lessons of 50 minutes with fragmented and fragmenting activities within it that were posted on the notion of children in need of managing and incapable of processing tasks over extended periods of time in order to demonstrate progress, I have been convinced that slow learning activities based on an interdependent group work need to be based on the belief that students need learning that is deep. In other words, SID learning. Don't worry, I have no intention of using this acronym after this post, and there is no book on the way. So, so I want you to listen to my interview with him over the telephone, over Skype, and see how they do things at Canon's to give you a little insight behind these three blogs. And the blogs are canonbroadside.blogspot.co.uk, and they're for Wednesday, 21st of November, 22nd of November, and 23rd of November, if I think properly, but they're in the sidebar there. And it's interesting where you can actually download an audio of the class debate. It's fascinating. Anyway, I'll pass over to Kevin to let you hear the interview. I'm with Kevin Bartle, and Kevin, I've just seen your Canon Broadside Blogspot Co. UK, SID learning, slow, yep, interdependent and deep. And it's just knocked me out. I mean, after looking at your Memento blog the other day, can you talk us a bit behind how you came up with this slow, interdependent, which is quite an interesting term, and deep? I get the slow and I get the deep. It's the interdependent I'm trying to sort of figure out here in it.
Yeah, interdependence actually is for me sort of like a very strong emerging concept, that this notion of independence somehow seems to convey aloneness, and that dependence is this kind of didactic model of teaching, and seeing interdependence as something halfway between that, where students are actually dependent upon each other, but also independent and working. I suppose it's collaborative working, but It's a bit more than that. So, and that's a real focus within my school at the minute, within a teacher learning community that I'm part of within school. And so I've been focusing on group work where the students are kind of like released really to work collaboratively with one another. And the thing that I've come to realise as part of that is that they need time to do it. And if you give them the two, the slowness and then the interdependence, that somehow the depth kind of follows through on that, particularly if you provide the right resources for them. Although I have to say, I keep putting this in the post, that SID is entirely meant as a mock acronym rather than an acronym. I'm aware that it's got a short shelf life.
But the interesting thing about that, as you say, it's a toss-up between intervention and resources and orchestration in many ways, because looking at your description and listening to the audio that you've got of the debate to do with the activities, they're so involved, and it's the orchestration of that balanced against the actual triggers in terms of what you put in front of them and how you pose the questions about that. That seems to be the skill involved here. So that you hook them in. What I wanted to ask you about that, have you done a lot of pre-work like this leading up to this?
I mean, the three posts that I put up about this SID learning are actually all to do with just introducing the students to the official statistics, to the high levels of data. Prior to that, there'd been a lot of work on the theoretical side of sociology, And this was moving them into a new venture. So no, in a lot of senses, this was the first time they were coming across data. And I suppose with data, it's so rich when you give students a lot of data. And the data I use is from the social trends data produced by the Office for National Statistics. They have to have time to make sense of it. They have to have time to get it wrong and find out what are the essential parts of it. So the slowness, I suppose, helped that as well. And we did have a little bit of time as a class to see the richness of it. But it's just presenting them with it and with something to do with it and letting them explore it in their groups.
And for me, that's quite interesting because, as you say, possibly before this, it would be more discursive with some of the lessons in terms of the data.
There's been a array of lessons. There have been lessons where I've taught from the front, although it's something for the last 2 years I've been trying not to do, trying to get them working collaboratively, put the tables together and form these groups and make sense of it. The big focus this year for me has actually been making sure that roles within the groups had greater clarity and that what was expected of them was more obvious to them, so that individuals didn't get lost along the way and didn't allow others to dominate. And so there has been a little bit of poking around more with group roles than with pedagogy.
Yes, I did hear you on the tape saying to certain people, you know, basically, yeah, you're hogging it a little bit, so can you take a listening role for the last 10 minutes? I thought that was quite well put, because...
I mean, they're a very good group, and the one thing that I always say to them is that I won't hold back in my praise for them, but also, if necessary, I won't hold back in my constructive criticism for them. And they appreciated that, but they were still chomping at the bits, towards the end. And I think there were one or two of them that managed to sneak in with further contributions. But it is that sense of making sure that there's that awareness of everybody within the group and making it a collective responsibility for all to contribute. I think that's absolutely crucial in that.
And where I've seen this before, because I covered the Computing at Schools conference this summer, I did all the videos for the conference, and people were talking about getting kids into, or students into, groups of three. This is sixth form as well. And actually, they actually stayed in those groups all year. But that's another way of doing it. But this trend towards people realising there's an apprenticeship of being able to reflect and bounce off people and teach those skills... that seems to be coming up naturally in many areas, which people are finding quite effective. as a form of pedagogy, one form of pedagogy, not the form of pedagogy, not one nostrum to rule them all, you know. But it does seem to be coming up on the inside, and I just find it fascinating. I mean, what led you to this way of working? You said Helen, did you, was one of the people who was suggesting this in her blog, or was it other elements that you'd read about or thought about?
Yeah, I mean, Helen's blog, I think, in particular, is Monkey Learns. What she does really, really well is she demonstrates how the lesson is sequenced and very clearly articulates what she's done in the lesson and what impact that's had upon the students. And so it was more the structure of the post that came through that. In terms of, I suppose, working with students and really focusing on them collaboratively, a lot of inspiration comes from actually going back to the work of Vygotsky and this notion of the zone of proximal development and realising that in class you can spend so much time trying to assess students and evaluate their work independently alone, but actually the power of collaboration will, yes, in the short term allow kids to demonstrate more than they could do alone, but if you keep that going lesson after lesson after lesson, the notion is that they will develop and that they will develop those higher order thinking skills through collaboration rather than through independence.
Yeah, that's music to my ears because I got trained in the 70s and Vygotsky.
Yeah, it was the 90s for me, actually, the time just when Vygotsky was starting to disappear, really, from
yes, that's
most,
right.
educational policymakers' radars. But I think there is a sense that that's coming back. There's a sense that we've reached the end point of national curriculum levels. You know, the GCSE fiasco issues this year seem to be giving less and less trust on externally marked and validated. And as the policymakers push that way, I think the pedagogues amongst us are kind of like pushing almost the opposite.
Yes, I totally agree. I think it's about taking control, taking responsibility. You don't sort of give it up, but you focus it locally. And for me, it seems to be this, you know, this is my usual thing, that everyone is too concerned about external pressures. And if you just relax a bit and get into the pedagogy and into your own school community, you're not going to have to worry too much if you get it right. You know, it seems to me that's a given in many ways. But a lot of people worry about external pressures and quite rightly. But, you know, maybe they need to just chill a little bit and get into the depth of what they're doing. I don't know what you feel about that, but
I think interestingly the loss of agency that happened that made people cling more tightly to those externally validating sources such as exam results, league tables, Ofsteds. What's happened in recent years and certainly the last 2 years is governmental agencies are taking even more of that agency away, and as a result, I think people are starting to feel bold. I mean, if we're down to virtually zero notice inspections, then it's end game in terms of making sure
yes.
they're offered what they want,
yes.
Because you know you're just going to have to be that good on a day-to-day basis. And if we can't trust the exam boards and the regulators to make a decent fist of validating students' work, then we might as well just go with what we think is right instead. And so I think, you know, it's an interesting time for us as educators to try and grasp the agenda and do what we know is right and have confidence and belief that the other things, the league table position, the kids getting HCs or whatever, will flow from that.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I was interested in interdependent, because there's that suggestion of accountability deeply embedded in there. And when you listen to your students debating, you think, God, this is really interesting. That, you know, they are totally involved in that. And in no way is any of this superficial. Done well, it seems to me that you're not putting on a show for the inspectors, you're not worrying unnecessarily about extraneous things, you're trying to develop a more organic way of working with the community, the school community, in a way that is going to draw out the best elements, no matter how you do it, you know, but it's nice to see on a website like Cannon's Broadside, and obviously I've got to talk to Helen now, about these exemplars that are out there. I mean, people won't just take them. They'll if they're clever, they'll reflect on them, yeah. and reconfigure how they work within their own local contexts.
Yeah, I mean, Cannon's Broadside's been an interesting one because it's set up for Cannon staff, it's set up for the school staff, and but actually it has far more of a readership outside of the school at the minute, and people in the school are starting to hear about it from other people, and it's a case of, you know, creating content that at some point for our staff will become perhaps one of the most relevant CPD sources that we have available to them. But at the minute, it's for some of them in the school to be flying beneath the radar, and yet nationally it's starting to get quite a bit of attention.
That's always the way. I mean, you've always got almost got 6,000 views on that page alone, the first one. So you must be doing something right there in terms of interest and people wanting to know about this. I mean, it basically, anyone else would think, well, that's just quite a dry pedagogic outline. And you've got 6,000 views, you know.
For us at Cannon's, it really are to get more voices on there. There are four voices on there. And interestingly, three of the voices are from senior leadership team level. But the one that's got the biggest number of hits was a guy who was in his NQT year when he wrote a post, a guy called BioMadHatter on Twitter. And he's, you know, I keep on saying to him, you know, your post is still the number one post of the lot. And the next stages for us are to get more and more classroom teacher contributions going on. And that's part of our drive for our internally validating and internally supported pedagogy that we've been working on.
I mean, yes, I mean, again, this is like James Michie, who's been doing stuff like this, and it's out there, and you have your evidence out there, and everyone can see it up on your blog, and it's as you go along. It's a record of day-to-day working, and in many ways it makes the whole process that much easier because you are reflecting. It takes a long time to put this stuff down, I know, but those reflections are going into it, and by doing that, I really do truly believe that if you reflect on practice, you become better. You've got to be, in terms of moving things on, because you're cataloguing, but you're also thinking about how that went. And of course, you will get feedback from other people from way beyond your local situation, which is always the interesting bit.
Absolutely. I mean, we've got the Cannon's OPP Twitter account as well, and initially that seemed to be the route to communicating to our staff, but also to a wider audience. But actually, the blog site appears to me now to be the area where we might start seeing something that we can direct staff to when you know, if staff say they want to have slower activities, you know, we can point them in this slow, interdependent, deep learning blog posts. But I think the important thing for us is going to be whether or not we can develop a greater array of voices on, so that subject specialists can see different things that relate to their area, so that people of different leadership responsibilities can think about pedagogy in their area, and make it a very rich, very vibrant, almost like a cacophony of reflective practice that at any stage, you know, different people can draw from.
Oh, well, I really wish you luck with that, and I'll point people to it. It's cannonbroadside.blogspot.co.uk, and I suspect this is something you might... Are you going to SLT Teach Meet?
Yes, I hope to go to SLT Teach Meet. We're myself and the assistant head teacher I work with are presenting up at the SSAT National Conference on our sort of vision for pedagogy the day before, so it will depend a little bit on whether or not we can get down there. But that's certainly a place I'd like to go to.
Because basically, I think that's the first one, isn't it, for senior management?
Yes, definitely. And I think it should be good to see how that develops and whether or not that can offer a better vision than perhaps SLT Chat is working as at the minute for reflection, not just a sort of trumpeting mechanism.
Yeah, I think chat mechanisms, well, chat generally, it's a kind of different medium, but it needs also to be nuanced. You're not going to get very far just going round and round doing the same thing. I think that Teach Meets do that to a certain extent, and they need to be nuanced a bit more. At the moment, Teach Meet Twist is quite an interesting variation on that going on tonight, where people actually stop and then they face each other face to face and actually have a discussion face to face, rather than just pulling up resources and making people go wow about this, that and the other, which is great, but actually sitting down and actually having a discussion and some reflection around something where you actually pull out a deeper strand from what you're trying to do. And it all looks like the these little bits of coral are slowly joining up, because I've been looking at Teach Meets and things like this for 5 years. And now, all of a sudden, not only Cannon's Broadside, there's Helene, there's David, Learning Spy, and other people blogging, even other people who are slightly curmudgeonly adding to the debate, which I won't mention.
I think I know who you're talking about.
But they all come from the same place.
There's a very good school blog site, Cherwell. I don't know how well you know that, but that was the inspiration for Cannon's Broadside. I think at the minute Cherwell are now looking to have guest bloggers from other schools and from other places contributing to their school's blog site.
Oh, right. I'll go along and look at that. Well, I have to say thank you. I'm running out of money, Kevin, on the old Skype, but thank you so much for this. Can I end it there?
Yes, sir.
And in the next section, there are a couple of one-off resources. This one I like very much. It's Dom's MFL page. And again, it came up in Teach Meet Twist, and it's a French news website for any kind of French learner, but it could be useful at AS and A2 exams. And it's a news site every day. It publishes one news story each day, Monday to Friday, along with accompanying PDF worksheets of teachers, background material for the story, and very often a video clip too. And you can sign up to receive daily emails and follow them on Facebook or Twitter. And you can search through the archives by topic or date. Very much like Learn for Life News. So I imagine there's a lot of work gone into that. And the bit.ly for the French news site is bit.ly/jour_actu. Jour, JOUR_actu. And the next resource, which is just a very quick out on its own resource for anyone who uses iPad, 6 iPad apps that help you create interactive study, and that's the Edudemic. And the bit.ly for the 6 study guides, and these are the apps to make the study guides, is ScreenChomp. So you can actually create screencasts of drawings you've made in real time. Study Blue gives students a list of important terms to know for their exam. Have students create flashcards. Socrative, you can create sample test items for students to review. Red Laser, all students love a scavenger hunt. Create a scavenger hunt for equations or vocabulary. Use www.qrstuff.com to create QR codes, post the codes around the school and have students complete the scavenger hunt. And Sonic Pix and Doodle Buddy. And you can find all those on the udemic.com site, which is bit.ly/_study_guides. And those are two lovely little sort of standalone resources. I don't like putting out resources too much, but those actually encourage collaborative or group learning, and where a resource offers far more than just one particular function. It offers a sort of cultural hook, eyes and hooks, like cultural Velcro, really. I quite like it, so I'll include it. The last part of the program is GovSpot. And what has Mikey been up today? Well, it's not Mikey so much as one of his compadres, Jeff Driver, who's head of Lancashire County Council. And there's a bit of internecine warfare going on here, because he's accused Michael Gove of bully boy tactics to drum up support for his flagship academies and to undermine traditional schools. And he's not too happy about the education secretary. The leader of Lancashire County Council said it is incredulous that he fails to acknowledge improvements in schools still under the control of local education authority. Obviously, he's been doing some slow writing, maybe, with that incredulous. Anyway, I leave that thought with you. They're fighting amongst themselves now, the local authorities Even the right-wing local authority is with the DfE. What? Who else is Mr. Gove going to alienate, one wonders, in his quest for the ultimate revolution in terms of his new model army out there pushing